leadership.
She's been charged with murder.
I'm glad to end social injustice and racial inequality.
Where is that leadership going to come from?
I wish America loved black people as much as they love black people.
Now it's time for all races to speak.
This is the time to listen.
This spirit broke in this
hurt.
Country.
I'm angry. Mm-hmm. But I ain't scared.
I got a grandfather that marched next to Dr. King in the 60s. He would be proud to see us all here.
I think it's sad that I'm here protesting the same thing that my grandma did 50 plus years ago.
As a black man raising black kids in America, I'm scared.
What broken time machine did Drew Brees just
something
walk out?
Something about empathy was off.
Drew Brees still
that
doesn't get
why
that.
Colin Kaepernick
you
knelt.
You're wrong for not listening to NFL players earlier.
Our communities are under siege.
We don't have time to wait.
You can't shut up. You can't shut up and dribble.
My patience left my body when I watched George Floyd take his last breath.
My son had to ask me, why didn't he get off?
It's been an extraordinary time on this program and in America. And I want to read you a post that Venus Williams put on Instagram last night saying that George Floyd's death just scratches the surface on racism in America. I'll read it to you. She wrote, take a moment to imagine this. If police brutality can exist and be tolerated so many years at this scale, imagine the other insidious acts of racism that permeate our country in the workplace, in the justice system, in the healthcare system, in the education system. She goes on to post, I'm amazed at the solidarity that has erupted across the USA. It has brought me to tears. I am so happy, so relieved as an African-American to finally be heard. I pray for those who have lost their lives and for their families so America could finally wake up and act. And with that thought in mind, we approach 10 o'clock in the morning Eastern time in the East here in the United States. I'm Mike Greenberg. We're in Bristol, Connecticut this morning. We have another hour of Get Up for you as our timing has been pushed a little bit. We're following Korean baseball for the remainder of this month and perhaps a little bit beyond that. So if you're tuning in for First Take, they will come along 1 hour later than usual. They'll be live at 11 o'clock Eastern time this morning. In the meantime, we will pick it up with news from the National Football League, where the world of football continues to address the implications of Commissioner Roger Goodell's video message Friday, saying that the league condemns racism and was wrong to not listen to player protests earlier. Yesterday, running back Carlos Hyde suggested one specific next step for the league to take.
I think the NFL can start by signing Capback. I think if they sign Capback, that'll show that they're really trying to move in a different direction because Cat was making a statement 4 years ago about what's going on in today's world, and the NFL didn't bother to listen to him then. So I think they should start by doing that.
Those are the thoughts of Carlos Hyde, and here are my guys this morning. I have Cliff Averill with us, who's been terrific in the times that he's appeared with us, and Booger McFarland and Jeff Saturday as well. And Cliff, let me start with you. You were there during this time when Colin Kaepernick became the central figure in these protests that took place during the playing of the national anthem. How important do you think it will be to players around the league if Colin Kaepernick is signed to a roster this year?
I think it's a step forward, right? But I also think this is a little bit more than just Kaepernick getting signed. I think he will get workouts. I think he deserves to get those looks and get the calls from teams and hopefully possibly get a chance to play on a team. But more so than anything, I think he deserves an apology from the NFL and from ownership throughout the league of how they treated him about this situation. But again, it's a little bit deeper than Cap. It's about doing the right thing from the NFL. It's about getting behind the real issues in America, the issues that a lot of your players face outside of the facility or the football field. Because at the end of the day, when you're out, you don't have that uniform on, you don't have that helmet on, we're all dealing with some of the different things that people are protesting about right now. So I think it's a little bit deeper than Cap, but I definitely just think he deserves the opportunity to be able to get back out there.
There isn't any question that the issues here go well beyond the man, but he is an important piece of it, it feels to me. So Booger, I guess I would ask you, what statement would it make if Colin Kaepernick wound up on an NFL roster this year?
Well, I think it would make a huge statement, Greeny. It would basically be for the owners, for the league, for Roger Goodell to kind of reiterate what Goodell has already said, in which we missed the boat. We didn't listen. Now, I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, even in Roger Goodell's 81-second speech to us on that he posted, he never mentioned Kaepernick's name. He never said, you know what? I apologize to Colin Kaepernick. Colin Kaepernick tried to tell all of us this, but I and we did not listen. So there's still a hesitancy from some in the NFL to acknowledge, yes, they're saying we didn't listen, But what didn't you listen to? You didn't listen to the one man in Colin Kaepernick, along with Eric Reid and others who joined in, that was trying to bring our attention to this. Instead, 4 years later, it took George Floyd being murdered on video to show us and for America to have an awakening. So I think he may get a look, but I honestly do not expect Colin Kaepernick to be signed. I think there's still some hesitancy, even to mention his name, even to bring it up. We've seen the president bring his name up, trying to make it more political. So I think there's still a lot to be worked out, Greeny. It would be steps. It would be progress. But let's not forget, Kaepernick's bigger message was bringing attention to what he already knew. And finally, after we saw a man get murdered on video, that attention is coming. It took 4 years. It took a lot more unarmed black men and black women dying. But hopefully now America's getting the point. And I think in a private moment, if you were to ask Colin Kaepernick, which I think we all want to hear from on this topic, if you were to ask him, I think he would feel maybe vindicated from 4 years ago and everything that happened. But he'd also feel like he's playing a large role in where we are now and how we're progressing and moving forward.
He is. There isn't any question of that. And I think we can separate that from the significance. Does he still want to be a football player? I have no reason to believe he does not. Everything that I've heard from anyone around him suggests that he still wants to play football. Just how important that is in the context of everything else, I obviously don't know, and he hasn't really necessarily said. But, Jeff, what do you think? How significant of a step would it be, and what would it mean if one of the NFL teams did sign Colin Kaepernick?
Yeah, I agree with both Boog and Cliff. I mean, it would be a huge statement for an owner or to step out and sign Colin Kaepernick to his football team. I'm kind of in alongside with Cliff, and I think he'll get workouts. He'll get opportunities that he may have not have had. I mean, even the workout last year in Atlanta was just, or maybe 18 months ago, it was just chaos, right? I mean, it was supposed to be one way. It flipped. All of a sudden it became, chaos around the moment. And so, you know, hopefully he'll get opportunities to go in with teams and meet with teams, but it's going to take somebody really stepping out and doing that. And what message does that send to America on a broader scale if they do sign Colin Kaepernick? But to both men's points, this is it's larger than just Colin Kaepernick getting a job, right? I mean, at the end of the day, what he was bringing the country's attention to, and finally 4 years later, what we're all discussing, I think, you know, hopefully we're going to take this for the greater good and continue to move forward. As far as where Colin Kaepernick ends up, does another team sign him? I'm just not sure. I'm aligned with both those guys. I just don't really know, will a team sign him this season?
I agree. And of course, there are far more important things here than whether any one individual plays football. But I do think it would be a signal of something so much larger if he were to get signed. We'll see if it does wind up happening. I want to play something that Neek said yesterday. Our friend Dominic Foxworth was here talking about why, in his view, the owners of the NFL teams should just do what's right when it comes to player protest. Here's what he said.
Like, how much money do you need to be free? How much leverage and flexibility do you need to stand up for what's right? Like, they have no bosses. There's no one who can do anything with them. They are billionaires. Do what's right because it's right, not because you're trying to make a buck. You don't need any more. Your house can't get any bigger. You don't need another plane or helicopter or yacht. Like, be free, be honest, and be truthful in this moment. Don't come out and say it because you think it's right or because you think it's going to sell tickets or appease your players. Say it because you have the luxury to be able to say and do the things that are important in this moment. Because can't nobody do nothing to you? They can take things from me. They can take things from your employees. They can't take nothing from you. Be honest and be true to who you are and be true to what you believe in.
I thought that was fascinating. And we have seen during this period of time a lot of people come to view issues differently. Perhaps we saw that in Drew Brees certainly last week and maybe others. So, Jeff, you've dealt with the NFL owners a lot in negotiating and things like that. Do you anticipate that they will see things differently than they did 3 and 4 years ago? Do you think there will be a different stance from the NFL owners when it comes to players peacefully protesting during the national anthem?
Well, first of all, I love Fox. I mean, that's my guy anyway. So I love how he phrases things and just the attitude that he comes at you with it, man. I mean, I love him. And so I would say this, you know, as I look at my life has been one that has been directly affected in a positive manner from strong black leadership, starting with my high school football coach, Ron Gartrell, my strength coaches in college, who when I was acting a fool, Jeff Mad Dog Madden, he'd get me squared away, Tony Dungy, Jim Caldwell, and I can name a dozen. Then obviously my relationships in locker rooms, Even my faith journey has been greatly impacted by Black men. And so as I look at my life is better because of these relationships. And I think, you know, a guy from my church, an African-American, said this weekend, you know, relationships are what help resolve racism. If you're an owner of a national football team, your relationships in the locker room should matter, right? Like, we should feel the pain that men that we trust, that we love, that we care about are going through. And so when they are crying out for change and for what needs to be, men need to step up and say, hey, what can I do? Listen, maybe you don't know. Maybe you haven't had those experiences, but now is a great time to not just listen, but to act, to make this country a better place to live in, to make the change that you know is possible. And to Nick's point, you don't have anything to lose. Step up where you can. Help where men that you know and are playing for your football team, you hear their cries, you understand. You may not have ever experienced it. I know I have not. I do know I love those men, and I'll walk with them when they ask me to.
It's an interesting way to look at that. I think it was worth pointing out, from what I know, I don't know that there are many NFL owners who have closer relationships with their players than Jerry Jones does in Dallas, and yet he was maybe the most vocal when this was going on several years ago in opposition to the protests. So Cliff, I'll ask you, you were a player who did take part in those. What did you hear from the ownership there in Seattle when you were playing there, with Paul Allen, and perhaps any other NFL owners that you may have encountered?
Well, you know, the great thing about being here in Seattle, one of the few teams during the protest, Coach Carroll, Paul Allen, both of those guys, they didn't push back when it came down to guys protesting. As you can see, a lot of us sat down during the to protest, and there wasn't any pushback. We had meetings in the locker room or in team meetings where we bring different activists in so they can learn as well, right? Because it was more than football to those guys. And I think that was really, really cool to see. I mean, you listen to Coach Carroll, some of his messages, and he understood the message at that, right? I think that's the biggest piece. He never thought it was about the flag. He always knew and understood the message. And I think that's the point that we need to push, is the message is about police brutality and equality, different things like that, that guys are fighting for. And I think our locker room, one of the few, we were able to capitalize off that as far as for being able to protest and being able to make sure we are heard, and they had no issues with that.
Booger, I'll give you the final word here. What are your final thoughts?
You know, Greeny, I truly believe that what we deal with inside the locker room is just a microcosm of what real life is. And let's just take the Drew Brees incident that happened last week. And remove the name Drew Brees, and here you have one of the richest players in the NFL who was inside of his bubble. And his bubble simply, his life was perfect. His life was great. And he had a belief that was selfish to him based on his grandparents and how he grew up. And that's kind of how he viewed life and allowed him to make the statements that he made. Now, magnify that, Greeny, by hundreds of millions of dollars. And now you have an NFL owner who essentially is in the same bubble. They have their billions of dollars and they've grown up and they've made all their money believing a certain thing. We saw something dramatic happen to change or to allow Drew Brees to tell us he's changing. I think the big question is this, Greeny. What's going to have to happen to billionaires to force them to change? For Drew Brees, it was the public humiliation on social media and everybody making him feel, from a negative standpoint, as worse as he's ever felt in his life. What's going to happen to billionaires who have everything? To Dominique's point, they answer to no one. They have everything. They don't need anybody else to tell them what or how to do. What's going to happen to them for them to have a change of heart? Because ultimately what it comes down to is what's inside of you. Okay, you have all the money. It's not about money. What's inside of you? Are you willing to do what's right? Are you willing to do the thing that's going to help push the message forward? Because if sports are just a microcosm of society, which I truly believe that is, then how can we use sports to push the message that's going on around the world? I think the NFL owners have a great opportunity to show the other billionaires around the country, the other people that money does not matter, how you treat people. I'm really fascinated to see how they respond and how they act, because I think they can set a tone for the CEOs of all these companies, for Apple, Amazon, all these billion-dollar companies. Let's not just release a statement. A statement is worth a grain of salt if there are no actions behind it. Don't just release a statement. What are your actions going to do? Are you willing to lose money to do what's humanly right? That's what this country needs to progress to. To hell with a statement, to hell with a post. Can you show America that the money really doesn't matter? Treat everyone how you want to be treated. To me, that's a powerful statement, and they're going to have to show me for me to believe that come this fall.
Guys, this stuff is so personal. I thank you so much for being willing to share it here with us. Thank you, guys. It's really as beautifully said, and we'll continue to cover this and to talk about it until as far as it takes us and as long as it takes us. In the meantime, we have more to do here this morning. We'll turn to some other matters. It was a bold move that worked 15 years ago when the Packers took Aaron Rodgers to replace Brett Favre. Will the result be the same this time around? We'll talk about it. And then after Brees, controversial comments and apology, the Saints called in another legend for advice. You'll hear what Shaq said that team needs to avoid going forward, as we do on Get Up this morning on ESPN.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, Social Security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Back on Get Up, and it has been, of course, a busy offseason for the Packers. No longer with the team is offensive tackle Brian Bulaga, who signed with the Chargers. Packers also lost Jimmy Graham, who signed with Chicago. Then 36 wide receivers were taken in the draft, tied for the most ever. And the Packers were one of nine teams that did not take one, which was, of course, notable since everyone thought they needed one. They did, however, trade up to take a quarterback, as you by now certainly know, Jordan Love, number 26 overall. And this is, very famously, not the first time they drafted a quarterback before their veteran was ready to hang him up.
With the 24th selection in the 2005 NFL draft, the Green Bay Packers select Aaron Rodgers, quarterback in California.
On the 15th anniversary of the selection of Aaron Rodgers, his team turned back time, doing unto him exactly as it had done unto the legend he was drafted to replace.
With the 26th pick in the 2020 NFL draft, the Green Bay Packers select Jordan Love, quarterback, Utah State.
Did it make sense? Well, consider this. Rodgers is 1 year older at 36 than Brett Favre was at the time. And while Rodgers had some flashy numbers a year ago, 26 touchdowns, 4 picks, a closer look reveals real questions.
He's been inconsistent. He can't carry the team.
Aaron Rodgers had 10 games with a QBR under 50 last year. Only Mitchell Trubisky had more. For the season, Rodgers had a QBR of 50.4. That was the lowest of his career. And now the writing is on the wall.
The beginning of the end for Aaron Rodgers and his time in Green Bay.
Doesn't matter who you bring in, they're not going to beat me out anytime soon.
This is the third straight year that a team with a Super Bowl winning quarterback drafted another in the first round. Both Joe Flacco and Eli Manning lost their starting jobs during that first year, and both were gone from their teams after the season. Does that same fate await the future first ballot Hall of Famer? No one knows, which makes this the most compelling question of the entire NFL season. And all year, we'll be turning for answers to our buddy Rob Domofsky, who covers the Packers for us. And Rob, you have a piece on ESPN.com right now where you describe Matt LaFleur recognizing that his offense lacked punch. What sorts of things are they looking to improve upon this season?
Yeah, Greeny, he said recently that they need to be more explosive. Well, how do they do that? Well, they didn't add, as you know, any receivers in the draft or free agency. So he said it's incumbent upon himself as the play caller to do it. And listen to the numbers that our research department got us. They were ninth in offensive efficiency. Not bad, right? But they were only 20th in explosive plays, trying to get plays down the field of 10 yards or more on the run and 20 or more on the pass. And it's not for a lack of trying. Aaron Rodgers had the third highest percentage of throws down the field, 20 yards or more. They just didn't hit on it, many of them. And LaFleur said it's incumbent on him as the play caller to, quote, take more chances.
Super quick here. Is there anything you've seen specifically in any of these relationships so far with Love and Rodgers and LaFleur? Will we be watching them together? Anything you've seen?
Well, obviously we haven't seen him in person because of the virtual program, but Rodgers told us recently that he, LaFleur, and offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett have had regular conversations about the offense and about implementing things that they want to do. Remember, with this Jordan Love pick, that's a Brian Gutekunst, the general manager pick. Matt LaFleur needs Aaron Rodgers, and he needs him to win now. And Rodgers said he really likes the conversations that they've had about where the offense can progress from year one to year two.
All right, Rob Domofsky, the piece is up on ESPN.com right now. My man, thank you very much. Let me get Cliff and Jeff back in here for some thoughts on this. Cliff, we've not had a chance to talk to you since the draft. What did you think when the Packers took Jordan Love?
You know, it's an interesting pick. I was more so under the same impression as far as, oh, they're just planning for the future, because I don't see this being a situation where Aaron Rodgers doesn't start this season. And I honestly think with the pressure of having a first-round draft pick and going through that process, he understands how well he needs to play, right? And I think the other side of it is coaches want their guys. Coaches have egos too, right? So coaches want their guys. And sometimes – dealing with veteran players and their habits, and they kind of get stuck in their own ways. Coaches hate that stuff. So I think bringing in a younger player, one, is to ignite Aaron Rodgers and to get him to play at that elite level, and then also prepare for the future. I mean, every single year I was in the league, they drafted somebody at my position. Mm. It doesn't do nothing but motivate you if you're really up for the challenge. And I think A-Rod is definitely down for that.
Hey, Jeff, I know it's not apples to apples. The situations are different. But you were there in Indy when Peyton got hurt and they wind up drafting Andrew Luck. If they had decided to keep Peyton around for a year and Luck was there, how do you think that would have gone?
I don't think it goes good. I mean, I don't think you have two quarterbacks. You got no quarterbacks. I mean, obviously, this football team was 13-3 last year with Aaron Rodgers. You have expectations that you have a chance to actually push and win the Super Bowl. Next thing you know, they draft a quarterback in the first round. I don't understand it. It would have been no different if Peyton comes back and he's healthy. Now, the issue for him was health, so the Colts were nervous about his health. But to have he and Andrew Luck on the same team and not help the team win at that moment, but to have another quarterback drafted, I don't think you're helping your team. I think ultimately you may have the, quote, franchise idea of moving forward. But if you're talking about winning now, if you're talking about, you know, giving your team the best chance to win right now, it's to have helped him with wide receiver help. You saw the stats that Rob gave you. Part of that is because you can't get a receiver to win. When you only have a one being Adams and no one else to take pressure off, it's difficult. Listen, this is a tough league to throw it anyway, especially when everybody's expecting it with Aaron Rodgers. That's a hard pill to swallow for me to draft a quarterback in the first round.
All right, we'll see how it plays out. Cliff, we so appreciate your getting up so early and doing this, and it's great to see you again. We wanted to give you a small gift here. So we're going to show two plays, and I would love you to take us through them. What happens on these plays here? Here's the first one.
Oh, that's a sack fumble, baby. Touchdown. Let's go. Let's go. That's the trifecta. That's what every defensive lineman wants. That's what every defensive lineman wants, to be able to get the sack fumble, be able to pick up the fumble, and take it to the house. And I was fortunate enough to get, one or two of those.
How about this one?
Oh, pick six, baby. It's got the Lions into the playoffs. This was the play that got the Lions into the playoffs after about a 30-year drought or some sort. I still want that ball back, by the way. Whoever has it, hey, send it my way.
There you have him. Two touchdowns in the same season for Cliff Averill. That first one off of Tim Tebow and that second one that put the Lions in the playoffs. Guys, thank you both very much. Cliff, great to see you again, man. And we'll do it again sometime soon. Jeff, you're the best. Thank you both very much. We'll continue as we go. Shaq knows a thing or two about navigating a tricky locker room. He told the Saints that last week. What did he advise them to do? You'll find out next.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
back on Get Up and We Get Up and Go. Major League Baseball made a new proposal to the MLBPA yesterday that calls for a 76-game season with players getting 75% of their prorated salaries. If a full postseason is played, the plan does call for less guaranteed money for the players over the 76-game regular season. NBA, the Spurs will be without the services of LaMarcus Aldridge when the league resumes in Orlando. The team announcing that the seven-time All-Star underwent surgery on his right shoulder in April. He will miss the rest of the season. Shefty is reporting Pro Bowl running back Dalvin Cook will hold out from all Vikings team activities until he receives what he determines is a reasonable extension. He has 1 year at $1.3 million left on his contract. And then there's this. NBA legend Shaquille O'Neal urged New Orleans Saints players to stay unified when he called into that team's virtual meeting last Thursday in the wake of Drew Brees' national anthem comments. ESPN confirmed that Shaq said this during the meeting. They're going to try to divide you, just like they divided us with the Lakers. Me and Kobe, we had a great thing going, but the media divided our team. We could have won five more championships. Stay strong. Don't let the media divide you. Don't let social media divide you. Fascinating words from such an interesting person. Let's talk about it here. Jalen is with us for the first time this morning. Hello, Jay, plus Jay Williams and Booger. But Jalen, I'll come to you first. This is going to be a time in all sports where so many players who've not been together are going to at some point soon start coming back together again. For example, in the NBA, they will reasonably soon. And there will be a time to talk through all the things that have happened in our country over the last few weeks. And Drew Brees, of course, is just the most famous example of that. What will those be like in those locker rooms where not everyone necessarily views things the same way?
I'm glad you're asking me this question, Greedy, because I've been a voice that have come on this show repeatedly and said to people that I don't like the analogy of comparing race relations to a sports locker room. And then Drew Brees makes these comments. And the reason why I don't like that comparison is when you're on a team, you have a vested interest in the guy next to you for your bottom line, to take care of your family, and the score of the game. Versus when you leave that locker room and you become an actual living, breathing human being. If Drew Brees is playing at an all-pro, future Hall of Fame type level like he has been in the past, his teammates are going to love him a lot more. If he starts to throw interceptions and he seems mentally challenged by this disruption, then people are going to be like, put in Jameis, put in Taysom Hill. But they're not going to forget what he said. But it is okay to forgive his apology.
What do you think, Booger, as far as the notion of a locker room being divided by issues like these?
Well, I think the locker room can become divided, Green, especially if you don't have conversation. I think when you look at this Drew Brees incident and everything that's happened, he's taken the first step. Yeah, he's talking to his teammates. They've had a meeting, and they've kind of aired their dirty laundry, so to speak, after we saw it all publicly. Now what has to happen is you have to come back with some actual works. I need to see you do things day after day after day. And, Jalen, I think what you're mentioning is motivation. There's motivation because you have a vested interest to get along and to come together. But I think, guys, this is a bigger picture. I think the motivation, as we've discussed all morning on this program, is just doing what's right. It's just being able to do the right thing. And Drew Brees has to change something inside of him, and he acknowledged that. And I think if he'll do that, I don't know if he'll necessarily – his play will dictate that, because Drew's a first-ballot Hall of Famer. I don't think anything that he does – on the field this season is going to change that. And so I think what has to change is the day-to-day life, the day-to-day activity, the day-to-day interaction that they have in the locker room, that has to change. And if so, the locker room has always been a great place for that because of the motivation of winning and coming together to win inside the locker room.
Jay Will, we know that there are going to be players who are going to come together here, people in every walk of life, and let's just use players because that's what we talk about, who don't all view this the same way. And this is an issue that is so intensely personal for people. Do you anticipate that might cause problems?
I do on the surface level to a degree. I think this is going to be an ongoing work in progress for this team. I do think, I do want to shift the narrative for 1 second, Greeny, because I think what we saw here was something extremely powerful, and we need to give credence to this to talk about how we move forward. People make mistakes in life. People misspeak. There are times that people have had you know, ways of thinking that they've had to been pushed to different thresholds to think differently. And I want to start pushing this narrative now about Drew Brees that we're watching a person evolve. And that's okay. That's what we all should thrive to do. We all should thrive to be a better version of ourselves. And we watched it happen in real time for Drew Brees. And I think as long as he continues to make those steps to show that he has evolved as a person, his past history has dictated that to me. I don't characterize his entire life off this one incident. I think it was a growth opportunity for him and this team. If they can use it to come together, because they all know the true character of Drew Brees, then I think that's a great lesson for our country to take, for a lot of people that may have thought one way that maybe have been pushed to different limits now to think another way. And what I'm saying to a lot of people that are in this fight, we need as many people as we can get to continue to expand their bandwidth of how they see the world. And if this is something that had to happen in real time that gave us this lesson, then thank you, Drew Brees, for bringing us and keeping us aware of how we can evolve as people.
That's really well said. Jay, Will, stay with me. I'm going to come back to you in a couple of minutes here and do some more basketball on our program. But there's another issue I wanted to talk about with the group this morning, and it takes us to Clemson. Nearly a week after Clemson assistant football coach Danny Pierman apologized for using a racial slur during a practice in 2017, head coach Dabo Swinney made his first public comments on the incident yesterday. Pierman never faced any discipline for using the slur, but Swinney said he believes he handled things the right way.
I would fire a coach immediately if he called a player an N-word. No questions asked. That did not happen. Absolutely did not happen. It has not happened. Coach Pierman was correcting DJ. He didn't do the right thing. I think DJ another player was talking to DJ, or DJ was yelling at the player. And DJ, you know, just kind of, you know, said something he probably shouldn't have said. And he said, you know, I blocked the wrong effing N-word. And Coach Pierman, you know, thought he was saying it to him, and he's mad, and he reacted, and he basically, in correcting him, repeated the phrase. And he said, we don't say we blocked the wrong effing N-word. And he repeated it. And he shouldn't have done that. There's no excuse for even saying that. It doesn't matter what the context is. But there is a big difference. He did not call someone an N-word. And so, again, I didn't know anything about it. Things happen. There's a lot of things I don't allow in our program. But when things happen, we do it. Sometimes it's in private. Sometimes it's public. This particular case, the player came to me in private, and we handled it in private. You know, there wasn't anything swept under the rug. There wasn't some dirty secret. We handled it head on.
As part of a 13-minute video, we tried to show you as much as we could to make sure it was representative of everything that he wanted to say. And Paul Feinbaum joins the conversation with us here. Paul, I'll give you the first reaction. What did you think of the way Dabo handled that yesterday?
You know, it's interesting, Greeny. When I heard it last night, I reacted viscerally. I was upset and asked the question, why did it take so long? And I started thinking overnight. I started trying to do what I've been telling other people to do. Listen instead of react. And overnight, I changed my mind, because in the end, Dabo Swinney addressed it, whether it was a week after the fact or who cares. I mean, we've been talking about being too late on so many things for so long that the time doesn't matter. He did it. And I believe him. I know Danny Pierman. I don't believe he's a bad person. I know Dabo Swinney is a very good person. I've been around him since he was in high school and college. And I think, in the end, he put this to bed. Maybe not exactly like I would have preferred, but who cares what I prefer? He was there. I wasn't. And in the end, I think he's put a bow on it. I think he's ended the conversation, and I give him credit for that.
Booger, you cover the sport a lot. You obviously know a lot of the people involved. What was your reaction to how he handled it yesterday?
Well, I appreciate Dabo coming out and making a statement and addressing it head on. I've known Dabo a long time. Dabo, to me, is the salt of the earth as it comes to a man. I mean, Dabo is a very faithful man. I think context matters in any situation, in any form in life. And I think the context in which he said makes a lot of sense to me. With that being said, I think what we have here is a perception standpoint. The perception of a coach using the N-word toward a player just doesn't sit right, especially now with everything that's going on in society. And so for me, I think Dabo did the best he could. Now, could he have fired Pillman? I think if the word were directed directly at the player, he would have called him it. I think Dabo, me knowing what I know about Dabo Sweeney, I think Dabo would have fired Pillman. But I think based on the context, based on who Dabo is, I'm more apt to believe it. I'm more apt to understand why he did it. But it still doesn't make it right, especially with the history. I'm a firm believer, Greeny. If you look at, if you want to understand why people become so emotional about something in the present, then follow the trail of how we got there. Understand the past and the foundation. And I think if you do that, you understand why this is such a very emotional and sensitive topic.
I'm being told that Jay Will really wants to get in. I will get you in, Jay, I promise. But Jalen, you reacted very strongly to this initially, and I saw some of your posts on Twitter and here as well. So what was your reaction to Dabo yesterday?
I think to give a genuine response about an action that is committed by somebody, whether they're a member of our family or friends or somebody that we've encountered in this business, is not necessarily to talk about whether they're a good or bad person. Hopefully we all intend to be that. That should come with just being a living, breathing human being, an adult. So we're not going to give people credit for, quote unquote, being a good person. We want to just talk about multiple situations for me that have shown me that Dabo's become a habitual line stepper. I remember because I was keeping score. He was one of the collegiate coaches that came out and was really outspoken during the Colin Kaepernick knee scenario and made sure he said publicly that any of his players that did that, they would be punished. He would not allow it. I just saw him recently online with a shirt that said football matters. If that isn't tone deaf, I don't know what is. I'm sitting here trying to think of any word he could have put in front of matters right now that would not have been tone deaf. And I still can't come up with one. So I'm not going to overreact to an assistant coach not saying the word to a player, but Dabo. And Paul, here's what I want to show you guys. He still ain't allowed to repeat it. That's the disconnect. And Paul, it does matter whether it was a day, a week, a month, or a year. That's the disconnect. These are things that got to be head on dealt with. And when they don't, the pain lingers. I'm looking down at my phone. I'm seeing more people in Tacoma, Washington that just got killed that said, I can't breathe. More incidents about the police, okay, that are happening right now during this pandemic. Timing and tone definitely does matter when you're in a position of authority and you happen to be a white coach. You seeing all of these players across the country, kids from Iowa, talking about different things behind the scenes that they allowed their basically their boss and employer to do to them. But they were muzzled because they were on scholarship and they didn't want to mess up their opportunity to play football.
Paul, I'll give you a quick response and then Jay, I'm coming to you. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, no, I hear you, Jalen. I hear you loud and clear. I just think that he was trying to protect Danny Pierman. And let's not forget, Danny was his coach in college. And I think that's where I began to formulate my thoughts. I said at the beginning, I'm completely baffled by the whole situation. It shouldn't have taken this long, but it did. But in the end, I hope that Dabo Sweeney will alter his rather narrow views of all of this. I really do.
Jay Williams, I'll give you a final thought.
Yep. Two quick things here, Green. Number one, you know, I agree with Jalen. I actually want to hear confirmation from the individual player kind of giving me context and how he heard it. I think number one, I think that'd be very important. And number two, these are all completely different conversations. I want to address something very quickly that I think is a very valid point here. And this is a systematic issue within the own Black community. I never want to give somebody subconsciously the permission to say that word ever, Greeny. Ever. And I think it's something that, you know, I've been on this network and I've been on a lot of other networks where I've heard people say, well, it's something for me to say with my friends, but that means you can't say it. This is not a word that I say. I understand what this word has been for our heritage and the word that's been used. So it's something also, again, I'm not saying the kid was at fault here, but I think if we're having heightened moments of awareness within our society, I think this is a great understanding and opportunity for me as a Black man and other Black people to take this and say, you know, maybe we should think about what that word means. And if we say it around other people, you know, does that give them permission to say that? Or does that put them in the situation to say that? And when this is a systematic issue, that I'm getting flustered by even thinking about it. It's just a word that nobody should use, period, Greeny. Nobody.
I understand. I understand the way you feel, and I certainly understand and appreciate the passion everybody has on this subject. I will leave it there. We'll take a very short break. We'll come back. We'll do some other things. We'll talk about some basketball as we go. The Rockets getting set to go into the playoffs. We will continue in a moment. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Napa know-how.
Get all the quality parts you need at your locally owned Napa. Because right now, when you order from Napa online, you can pick up curbside at your local store in just 30 minutes. Or get your order delivered direct to your door with free one-day shipping and over 160,000 quality parts when you spend $50 or more. Quality parts delivered quickly and safely. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating stores, standard ground shipping and exclusions apply.
We are back on Get Up, and I just came across this tweet from our Tim Bontemps, who covers the NBA for us extraordinarily well, and he tweeted, Hawks general manager Travis Schlenk said on a conference call with reporters this morning that the NBA has indicated to the league's GMs that next year's schedule could be condensed in order to try to keep the league as close to its usual timeline as possible. Bear in mind, this season could go all the way into the middle of October, and he went on to tweet that this could potentially mean the possibility of back-to-backs as well, and more. He said that could mean more back-to-backs and sets of four games and five nights for teams next season, things the NBA has actively tried to move away from in recent years. So who do we have ready? Okay, Jalen and Jay Will back with us here. Jalen, what are your thoughts on that, on the idea that they will try and compress next season so they can get in all the games in a shorter period of time?
I don't like the idea at all. And get ready for two words, load management, if that takes place. Mm-hmm. And you know I'm not a fan of that in any way, shape, or form. Here's the thing, if you're the NBA, and Greeny, you know I've been talking about this since the beginning of time. I always wanted the league to reset its calendar anyway. I know it's not best for the players because you get a chance to spend time with your family during the summer, especially when your kids aren't in school. I know this is a unique time. But just imagine, now all of a sudden those kids are not in school. They could go to basketball games at night and become NBA fans. What a noble thought. And also, you don't have to compete with the NFL earlier in the year. I say start around November 15th, no later than December 1st. Be ramping up by Christmas Day. Have your big time debut, and then you're off and running. Words like condensed, back-to-backs, four and five nights, those are the last words NBA teams and players want to hear, Greeny.
How will they react, Jay?
They won't like it. And I think this is only going to compound the issue. Jay Rose is 1,000% right. You're going to see a lot of guys, you know, think about what's in their best long-term interest. Guys want to remain healthy when they get to the playoffs. And I'll tell you this, Greeny, the last two summers have been pretty impactful for me from a basketball perspective. Last year with free agency, this year with the playoffs about to start. If you are the league, you know, I understand that you don't want to shorten the amount of games because you can lose out on a ton of revenue, but I don't want to hear condensed schedule. Like, let's keep things on a natural progression. And if we have a third season that happens to end during summertime again, then baseball is the one sport that you can go against. You don't have to go against football. You don't have to go against other sports, but you own summertime basketball. I know Jay Rose is going to say to me, because we've been on NBA Countdown talking about this, guys that want to play in the summer, but the amount of eyeballs that you'll be able to capture with summertime basketball might become the new norm.
Does that seem to make sense to you, Jalen? Do you see a world in which we all of a sudden just shift this calendar? I know you've been campaigning for it for a long time. Do you think it's a real possibility?
Absolutely. What do basketball players hoop in? Shorts and a tank top. Summer game, Greeny. And if you could get more basketball at that time of the year, as opposed to ending in June, imagine if you didn't end until August 30th. That gives you a different level of audience. And here's something that I'm going to ask the NBA to do. I'm glad I just thought about this. Not only when you talk about relaunching your season this year, but I'm also saying this for summer basketball. This would increase the visibility of the NBA, but also use this opportunity to increase the visibility of the WNBA. Whether they're doubleheaders on the same day, whether they get an opportunity to go to Orlando and quarantine as well. To me, this should be a buddy system for the NBA and the WNBA between the quarantining and resuming playing basketball versus summer basketball, and have those more aligned versus acting like they're in a universal parallel.
I'm going to cut the conversation off there because there's one very important thing we want to do before we finish the day. We could not let Jalen leave without mentioning why this was a huge weekend for you, Jay. The Jalen Rose Leadership Academy, the class of 2020, got their high school diplomas this weekend. This was Jalen's message to the graduates.
The proud founder of JRLA, I wanted to show my gratitude by saying congratulations to the graduating class of 2020, especially in this unique climate that we're dealing with in our world and the civil unrest in the wake of the unfortunate death that took place at the hands of police of George Floyd. Make sure when you get the opportunity, you're voting for prosecutors, senators, governors, mayors, and definitely voting for president. People and circumstances will come into your life for four reasons: to add, subtract, multiply, or divide. I know you will choose wisely. Congratulations.
That's always been my favorite
one. Jay Rose.
Jalen, you're the best. What can you say?
You're the best. Jay Rose, you're looking like a politician out there.
The acknowledgement and the recognition. Congratulations to our staff, our scholars, so many people that are at JRLA on a daily basis making these young people goals and dreams come true, not only at 14 years of age, but at 22 years of age with a 9 through 16 model. Thank you very much.
Well, we're out of time here. The first take is starting in a moment. Guys, we love you. Thank you both so much. And we'll check in again, obviously, tomorrow. Coming up, first take, as I mentioned, more on the conversation surrounding Dabo Swinney and his thoughts yesterday. You'll hear all of that as first take begins in 5 minutes here on ESPN. And we finish by wishing a happy birthday to our buddy Dick Vitale, 81 years young today. Happy birthday, Dickie V. I'll see you tomorrow.